From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. A write-in candidate appears to have won a local Juneau election for the first time in 29 years. The latest unofficial election results that city officials published on Friday show Juneau Board of Education candidate Will Muldoon with a lead of almost 1,200 votes over the next closest candidate, Ivan Bailey. More votes could be added to the final tally, but not enough to change the outcome of this race or any of the others that were on the ballot. The last time a write-in candidate won a local Juneau election was in 1992. Sally Rue successfully mounted an 8-day campaign for the Juneau Board of Education. The 2,100 additional ballots added to the unofficial tally on Friday brings voter turnout to a little over 30%, down from last year's 20-year high. Another 300-plus ballots could potentially be added to the final tally. Those are ballots the city received, but were missing a signature or some other validating piece of information. The people who sent these should have gotten a letter from election officials with ways to fix it. They have a deadline at 9 a.m. Tuesday to cure their ballots and have them counted. The Canvas Review Board is scheduled to begin work certifying the election results tomorrow. Final election results are expected within 3 days, unless someone formally challenges the results. The cost of keeping an idled Alaska ferry at the dock is nearly twice as much as reported to the public and state lawmakers. The State Transportation Department has kept the Malaspina laid up since the end of 2019, and as Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, prospective buyers, including one that would use it to fight piracy, have had their calls go unanswered.
The nearly 60-year-old Malaspina was built the year JFK was assassinated, but the blue and gold mainline ferry hasn't carried passengers in almost 2 years. Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration didn't want to invest in the overhaul of its original engines from 1963. Since then, it's been laid up at Ward Cove, a private dock north of Ketchikan, while officials decide what to do with it, whether it be scuttle, sail, or donation. There's been commercial interest. One firm says it wants the Malaspina for anti-piracy operations off the coast of Somalia.
We would be using the platform, using it as a platform for housing personnel over in the Middle East and off of Africa. There's actually numerous uses for it.
Jonathan McConnell is president of Meridian Global Consulting, a security firm based in Alabama. The Malaspina has staterooms with more than 230 passenger bunks that he says could be outfitted as sleeping quarters for security contractors that patrol shipping lanes to deter attacks from pirates. Email chains between his firm and state officials show that more than a year has gone by since he first expressed interest. He last reached out in July.
We felt largely stonewalled by them, and we're like, listen, we're interested in this vessel. We realize that you're spending a lot of money just having it laid up, and you know, we'd be happy to take it off of their hands at, you know, fair market value. We're not trying to just offer them, you know, $100,000 or a couple $100,000. We're looking at paying, you know, $600,000, $700,000, $800,000, if not, you know, over $1 million for the vessel. And our claims were not even entertained, it seemed like.
Another prospective buyer in the United Arab Emirates has made a cash offer via email for $625,000 for the Malaspina as is. McConnell says the ship has cash value. It could be sailed or towed on a temporary Coast Guard certificate to be repurposed or sold as scrap.
You know, there's ample opportunities for use for that vessel. I mean, laying it up and spending $40,000 a month for layup fees is astronomical.
That was a view of many inside DOT as well, as a new Coast Alaska public records request reveals. Internal emails, some of them completely redacted, still show officials were surprised and frustrated with the expense of keeping the ship, especially after they learned that the roughly $40,000 a month figure often cited was only about half the true cost of keeping the ship in state ownership. One official pointed out that even giving the Malaspina away would save Alaska money. That's what the Dunleavy administration tried to do with the Philippines. Earlier this year, the governor offered the ship up, free of charge, to the Pacific Islands nation. But Dunleavy's chief of staff, Randy Ruro, told Coast Alaska the deal fell through when the Philippine government learned it would cost tens of millions to fix.
They said that would be, you know, out of their price range for, you know, wanting the boat.
But even afterward, the emails showed no evidence that efforts to dispose the ship resumed. The governor's Marine Highway Reshaping Committee recommended more than a year ago that the state sell the ferries it's not using. Earlier this year, the fleet's most modern ships, two fast ferries, were sold to a Spanish firm for service in the Mediterranean. Tom Barrett, the retired Coast Guard admiral, tasked with chairing the working group, says it's apparent the Malaspina is still a drain on state coffers.
Sell it or scrap it. You know, but you just don't want to keep holding it there indefinitely. It's also, you know, you've got insurance, but it's a risk factor. It's an old ship and it's tied up at a dock.
DOT confirmed to Coast Alaska that the cost of insuring the Malaspina ferry is approximately $420,000 a year. Add the more than $400,000 the state's paying in mooring fees under a sole source contract, and the cost is nearly double than ever publicly admitted. Those tasked with oversight of the ferry system say that's a lot more than DOT even disclosed to lawmakers, which is particularly problematic given the Marine Highway System's extremely tight budget. Those overseers include Juneau Democratic Senator Jesse Keel, who says he repeatedly asked the question.
I'm very surprised to learn that the Marine Highway System is able to allocate this insurance cost across each vessel and that they never bothered to mention it to the legislature.
Rouro, the governor's chief of staff, says he's taken personal interest in the Malaspina.
I will step in and talk to DOT, and we'll make sure that any offers or expressions of interest are all reviewed and vetted, for options.
One of the emails released was from a DOT official who said there's significant sentimental value of the ship. He said an evaluation of all alternatives in a public process would likely be the best approach. That was nearly 6 months ago. Since then, the idled ship has cost more than $400,000 to the state of Alaska. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Alaska State Troopers say a cake man reported missing has been found dead by a canine team searching for him. Troopers say the body of 55-year-old David Dalton was found Monday, about 2.5 miles from where his vehicle was parked near Sitcom Creek, south of Cake. Alaska State Troopers, in an update on the case, says it appears Dalton succumbed to the elements. The body was sent to the medical examiner's office in Anchorage for an autopsy. Dalton was last seen Friday afternoon and reported missing Saturday night. Searchers found some items that belonged to him about 50 yards from his vehicle. After days of heated public testimony, a mask mandate went into effect in Anchorage for most indoor areas on Thursday last week. The ordinance has numerous exemptions written into it and no clear penalties for violations. That's led some to question whether it will help reduce the spread of COVID. Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan reports on how that question is playing out at small businesses across the city.
Samantha Barr, co-owner of Granny's Guns in Southeast Anchorage, is no fan of masks.
I have asthma. I wear mine if I go into a store that requires it, but in general, I don't care for them.
She doubts they work, and she says gun stores are especially susceptible to would-be thieves, so people walking in with masks make her nervous. She says she'll let people coming in wear masks anyway, and she'll even consider wearing one if a customer asks her to.
I will probably just do it on a case-by-case basis. Like I said, I don't expect this administration to enforce this.
Barr's attitude reflects that of some businesses in Anchorage that oppose mask requirements. Instead of actively enforcing the mandate, some have opted to post the text of the ordinance in their windows. On social media, some customers say they're sticking with businesses that don't enforce the mandate. Ordinance supporters say they expected that, and they point to what they see as a silent majority of businesses that are making changes, like at Fat Boy Vapors, an electronic cigarette shop. Owner Matt Wagner.
I'd say there is an increase in folks wearing masks, and I'd also say that there's certainly some upset individuals.
Compliance isn't perfect, and online social media posts suggest that many are taking advantage of exemptions for people with disabilities. T-shirts that say the wearer is part of Dave Bronson's administration, which is also exempted under the ordinance, are available online. But Midtown Assemblymember Meg Zalatel, who sponsored the ordinance, says that's okay.
What we've heard from public health experts is we don't need perfect compliance. What we need is pretty much majority compliance. And in addition to other mitigation measures, this is really the lowest hanging fruit.
She says that under a previous mask mandate that went into effect last year, compliance went up by about 20%, even with similar exemptions and without clear enforcement mechanisms. Some businesses are happy about the change.
Hello.
At the Tiny Gallery, an art shop in downtown Anchorage that relies largely on tourist spending, owner Lorette Rose says she's hopeful the mandate will reduce COVID spread.
If you look around downtown, there's not a lot of foot traffic. There's not people walking around, and that's not because of the mask mandate. That's because of case counts being high and people working from home. That's worse for downtown businesses than any mask mandate could possibly be.
The idea that mask mandates will help business is borne out by academic research, says Nolan Clauda, who directs the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development. He cites a University of Washington study.
The communities that had a rule requiring masks in most public places had 5% more consumer spending than those that didn't have it.
Surgical masks, when worn properly, can reduce COVID spread by about 10%, according to a recent large-scale study. But Clauda says the more important piece is the perception that they work.
A fear of infection is the biggest thing that keeps people away from local spending. So if you're easing that that fear, then anything that does that is likely to increase a little bit, you know, people spending locally.
Mandate supporters on the assembly hope the carrot of economic recovery will help convince more people to mask up. They also hope the Bronson administration will use the stick of enforcement, something it so far hasn't shown it's willing to do. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Lex Trinan.
That's it for the KTOO News Update for Monday, October 18th, 2021. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.